Good day, everyone. So welcome on Touchnet Talk. We're very glad today to receive Exit 266 for a new installment of our discussions with her. This is the fourth time, if I'm not mistaken. So very quickly, an introduction about us and then about her. We are a group of concerned citizens who are trying to keep an eye on the situation in Ukraine and around Ukraine, and to spread this information as precise and as current as possible to as many people as possible. And Exit, well, Exit is a very interesting character. If you want to know more about her, you can refer yourself to our first interview with her. But to make it simple, she is a self-appointed central intelligence for the Black Sea grain situation, and she's very, very good at this. And if you do not follow her yet, please do so. Exit, good day to you, ma'am.
I am so worried about the flack I'm going to get about being a CIA agent now. I don't even know how to respond to that.
Oh, you've never been accused of being a CIA agent? How much are they giving you? And that's usually the line. But no, I don't believe you're a CIA agent. I don't even know what's the Canadian equivalent of CIA.
I think we're CIS, maybe? I don't know. I'd have to ask somebody else. I'd say I'd have to ask Mr. Bond, but then everybody would think he was a CIS agent. So who knows? I can't say that I've actually looked that up in the last couple months, so I can't remember off the top of my head.
Okay, we'll call them the Mounted Information Agency. I think that will fit. In any case, so welcome board, welcome everyone. We're going to be talking about the very, very interesting and I would say strange situation unfolding at the moment in the Black Sea, and everything that has to do with Ukraine's attempt to export its most needed grain to the rest of the world. So we talked together about a month ago. Do you remember what was the situation, let's say, around mid-July or early July?
That literally seems like a year ago at this point. Oh, and it's CSIS. I had to Google it because I'm a curious person. The early July, so we were coming up to another renewal period for the Black Sea Grain Initiative. On July 17th was the renewal day, and I'm sure you all know by now, Russia decided not to renew the Black Sea Grain Initiative, and they essentially canceled the program, pulled out of the deal, notified everybody that they weren't going to go forward with a renewal, and the last ship left Odessa on July 16th.
Yeah, the end of the grain deal. There were basically two scenarios, if I remember well, that we were expecting. The first one was going to be, well, not a single ship will travel through the Black Sea anymore, because the risk of Russian missiles, Russian submarines, Russian sea mines is way too high. And the second reading was more or less it's going to continue as is, because the Russians have no legal backing to stop the trade. So which one of those two scenarios turned out to be the closest from the truth?
Kind of a middle ground, a little bit. So there, up until yesterday, there were no ships that traveled out of Odessa area ports. So that is specifically the Black Sea ports that were open during the Black Sea Grain Initiative. No ships traveled out of those ports, and no ships traveled to those ports. So that traffic was essentially shut down by Russia pulling out. The Danube River ports, so Ukraine has a couple of Danube River ports. Two of the biggest ones are Izmail and Reni. They have continued to operate for the majority of the full-scale invasion. In the last month, there's been some less informed people who didn't know what normal was, talking about how it was notable that there was all these ships continuing to head to the Danube River ports. And it wasn't as notable as a lot of the larger news agencies and some others framed it. Those ports had operated almost without any real stoppages. They did have a little bit of a slowdown and stoppage at the very beginning of the full-scale invasion, but they actually still continued to operate some passenger ferries and a couple of other things. They really were ignored by Russia for the most part up until the end of the Black Sea Grain Initiative. The other thing that we saw was that Russia specifically, at the end of the Black Sea Grain Initiative, within the next 24 hours, began to bombard the Odessa area ports, specifically Chernomorsk and Odessa, with missile and Shahed attacks, essentially trying to destroy the infrastructure in those areas, because there had been a number of pieces of information that Ukraine had talked about that kind of led people to believe that they were really working ardently with their supporters and their partners to continue the grain deal, but continue it without Russia, and Russia's best course of action to kind of halt that and make ship owners believe that that was too dangerous a proposition was to attack those ports, so that people understood that Russia wasn't going to just back off and allow this to happen. And so we saw a huge increase for a week of attacks on those port areas. And then they subsequently moved down to those Danube River ports and attacked them as well, trying to basically destroy the grain infrastructure, the grain export infrastructure for Ukraine as a whole.
And have they managed?
Not entirely. They definitely have done some damage. They haven't destroyed everything. So there's absolutely still an ability to export grain out of those ports. Notably, there is a third Odessa area port called Yuzhny, which hasn't been attacked by Russia during this entire shutdown for the last month. That's something you should probably pay attention to a little bit. There's some reasons why that probably happened. I intend to write a thread on it. Have not yet found the time to do so. Might even be this weekend. We'll find out. It'll shock all of us if I actually get it done. But they essentially have slowed down traffic at the Danube River ports. They have shut down traffic for the most part to the Odessa area ports. Yesterday we saw specifically Ukraine was able to take one of the ships that had been stuck in the Odessa port since the very beginning of the full-scale invasion. So that was 539 days ago as of today. The Joseph Schult was able to sail out of Odessa yesterday. It's a large container ship, by far the most expensive ship that was sitting in port. So obviously that cost the ship owners and the insurance company that insures it a lot of money to have it just sitting there for a very long time. And they were able to sail that out of Odessa. They are currently down into Bulgarian waters and well on their way to a Turkish port. And we have not seen any evidence so far that anybody has tried to interdict that ship at all. So, yes, they have shut down traffic in some ways, but that hasn't exclusively been something that Russia has succeeded at. Ukraine has also succeeded in adjusting traffic to Russia's Black Sea ports in that last month of time period as well. And so we've seen a change in how shippers and companies have been able to move out of Russia's Black Sea ports as well.
Fantastic. So that's, and do we have an idea of the impact quantitatively of this Ukrainian disruption of Russian traffic?
I'm hesitant to put any kind of framing around that, specifically because while there has been a slowdown for a couple of days, so how Ukraine basically slowed traffic down was the most impactful event was they attacked a Russian ro-ro ship, so a roll-on, roll-off ship that was acting as a ferry service because of some of the shutdowns of the Kerch Bridge. And for a number of other reasons, it was acting as a ferry service. It was a Navy ship, Russian Navy Black Sea Fleet ship, and they attacked it with a USV, so an unmanned surface vessel. I think I have that right. Surface vehicle, sorry. And they were able to cause some really major damage to that particular ship. And then on 24 hours later, they were able to attack what is factually a commercially owned oil tanker, but it has been contracted out to the Russian Navy and Russian armed forces, essentially, for the entirety of the full-scale invasion. And that ship has, and its sister ship, have transferred air jet fuel to Syria for Russia's operations in Syria. And so that ship was attacked again by a USV, and a large hole was left inside of it. We have visual evidence of both of those things. And that particular ship, because it was a commercial ship, kind of made insurance companies and shipping companies kind of hold in their tracks for a minute and try and assess exactly what the new risk profile was for Russian Black Sea ports. I have had some information in the last couple days that shipping has picked up again to those ports specifically, and that because Russia has been so effective with shutting down the Danube River ports and the Odessa area ports, the amount of grain leaving Ukraine right now is quite small. And those buyers who normally would be purchasing Ukrainian grain because it had a price advantage over a lot of the other places that they could purchase from, they now have moved on to purchasing Russian grain for the most part because A, it's a more secure, it's more likely that they will actually be able to ship that grain out, and B, it is currently a cheaper price than what you're going to get for the Ukrainian grain. So while they were able to slow down the exports from those ports for a couple of days, that hasn't held out. And part of that is specifically because Ukraine has been really intentional about saying, we will not be attacking commercial ships who are legally exporting goods from Russia. That's not their intention. Their intention is solely to attack military cargo and military ships and ships working in a military capacity to support Russia's Navy and armed forces in other ways. And so simply by being very specific about that and by following the rules, like the rules of warfare, they essentially are not as big a risk as what Russia is, because Russia is far less predictable and has said that they will affect commercial shipping much more.
Yeah, they've said that they would consider any ship as potentially carrying military cargo, and as a result, as about potentially an acceptable target for them. However, there was a recent intervention by the Russian Navy, that stopped a ship. Was it bound for Odessa or was it coming from Ukraine? I don't know. Can you tell us more about this episode and how it relates to those Russian claims to be potentially sinking any and every ship that could come or go to Ukraine?
So there was a commercial ship, the Sukru Okan. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. It is a commercial ship. It was headed to the Danube River port of Izmail. And it was out in international waters. This was on the 13th. And a Russian Navy ship, patrol ship, the Vasily Baikov, stopped that ship. And a helicopter launch from the Baikov landed on the Okan. And they essentially conducted an inspection and then allowed that ship to continue on its way to the port it was going to. There was a lot of uncertainty and misinformation passed around that day. There's some really great accounts that actually followed that. I will put a thread up in the nest about that in a second here. But essentially, we know for sure now that they did actually board that ship. They did actually run an inspection on that ship. We know that the ship was specifically a Palau-flagged ship owned by a company registered in the Solomon Islands, but that operates out of Turkey and with a Turkish owner of that company. So as targets go, that was a relatively safe one for Russia to choose. Turkey wasn't especially likely to publicly comment on the situation, and they have so far been mostly quiet about it. Whether or not they're having discussions in the background that we don't know about, that's a possibility and probably fairly likely. But they essentially stopped the ship, inspected it, allowed it to continue on its way. They technically are within rights to do such things because they did it in international waters. However, that is absolutely an escalation of how they have acted through the majority of the full-scale invasion. This is like the very first one that they've ever done, the first inspection. And specifically, they really just haven't played around with ships headed to the Danube River ports at all. So the fact that they are even concerned with these ships is a different course of action than they've had for the majority of the full-scale invasion.
Oh, that's very interesting. So you're reading this as an escalate due to the destination of the ship. I would have thought that it was more like in comparison with what they're doing to the grain infrastructures on land, where they're willy-nilly dropping missiles and destroying everything without even a pretense that, oh, but there were a tank hiding there or something. Just destroy it. Whereas at sea, well, they had this intervention, they had to check it, and then they left and allowed the ship to go through. So there was, I thought there was a clear imbalance between sea and land, but I had not tried it as an escalation. So can you elaborate a little bit on this escalation thing?
Yeah, so it just gets back to understanding what's normal. And so throughout the entirety of the full-scale invasion, so since February 24th of 2022, they really have, up until July, I think it was like the 20th, they first attacked those ports. But it was right after the cancellation of the Black Sea Grain Initiative. But for that first 18 months, they ignored basically all the traffic to the Danube River ports. They really didn't play around with those ships at all. They didn't ever talk about those ships transiting, they weren't included in the Black Sea Grain Initiative. They literally just ignored them. They ignored the ports altogether. They never attacked them. They weren't concerned with those ports because, frankly, they don't export that much through those ports. They're just not big enough because they are river ports. You can't get really big ships into those ports. And so you really didn't have the same kind of traffic through there. And they would have had to hold on to Snake Island and control Snake Island in order to effectively control the traffic, all of the traffic in and out of those ports. And so they just essentially couldn't. Ukraine was able to push back on Russia's control of Snake Island just enough that they couldn't really convincingly try to consistently control the shipments out of the Danube River ports. And so to then go from ignoring them altogether to attacking them with air assets to then actually physically stopping ships who are headed to those ports, that's a very consistent course of escalation in how Russia has treated those ports specifically. And it's different than what was normal for the 18 months before that. So it's really something to pay attention to. And part of the reason that they boarded that ship on that day, I believe, is because the whole week before, Ukraine had specifically said, A, they had re-released information about their humanitarian corridor that they were trying to designate through their territorial waters and then down through Romania and Bulgaria and all the way to Turkey. They had first announced that just after the closure of the Black Sea Grain Initiative, hoping that ships would kind of continue to try and export out of Odessa because it is a lucrative market, whether you, no matter how you look at it, if you can continue to export grain out of Odessa, A, it's good for Ukraine, but it's also good for people actually trying to purchase that grain because it's just a cheaper product than you're going to have to take out of the Danube River ports. So they, after the closure of the Black Sea Grain Initiative, they announced this humanitarian corridor where the shipping corridor was, but they specifically said, like, there's a higher mine risk now because we know that Russia has been laying more mines in the Black Sea. And nobody really took them up on that. So then the week before this boarding, again, Ukraine specifically said, okay, we are re-upping on this humanitarian corridor and we're going around and trying to sign up some of the ships that have been stuck in port since February 24th and get them to sail out the humanitarian corridor, which really truly is just a humanitarian mission. Like, these ships have been stuck for 19 months now, and to get them out is just really a humanitarian cause and doesn't really have anything to do with the war. And so they had been very public about the fact that they were going to do this. And the night before the Baikov stopped the Okan, you saw one of the ships in Odessa port turn on, well, its AIS had been turned on, but it reported that its new destination was going to be Istanbul, Turkey, and that it would get there on the 15th, I think. Sorry, I think that was a day and a half before they stopped the Okan. And so I'm certain that Russia saw that as well, saw that there was a ship preparing to actually sail out of Odessa, and wanted to have some sort of power play to kind of scare that ship off. And that's when we saw them stop the Okan the next day. And I'm not sure that you'll convince me that those two events weren't related.
I'm not sure I want to convince you that they're not related. Okay, that's very interesting on the evolution of the Russian perspective and strategy in the region. But there is one thing which stuck with me that you said a while ago and where what was very adamant about, which was that the problem of the Green Deal was that in effect it allowed Russia to have a say in internal Ukrainian affairs without giving anything in exchange virtually. A famous YouTuber said a little bit the same thing by saying that the what the Green Deal allowed Russia was to, in effect, maintain a blockade of the Ukrainian ports. The blockade being that you can check, but you cannot stop everything. You can just check that there's no military products going back and forth. And it allowed them to maintain this this blockade on the cheap. And now, well, since they've left, they've had to get their ships close to the Ukrainian coast. Isn't it a fact that A, it's going to be more expensive because they're always going to have ships at sea, etc., and B, it's going to be a lot more dangerous because, well, with those ships at sea, considering what the Ukrainians have in terms of missiles and in terms of USVs, it's going to be in terms of risk a lot higher for Russia. So, in a way, it is an escalate, but at the same time, they're exposing themselves to risk. Would you say it's correct, or would you disagree with that assessment?
So I would disagree with two things. A, it's not a blockade. You cannot actually call it a blockade. A blockade, if you read some of the legal terms around it and the discussion of it, a blockade means that you have to effectively stop all exports and imports, or all traffic essentially, to the ports of the country you're trying to blockade. Russia has not been able to do that at any point in the full-scale invasion, nor have they even really tried, honestly. And they are not capable of effectively doing that at this point. So I would encourage us all to move on from the term blockade, because it's just not factually accurate. Russia is trying to slow down those exports. They had a very effective way of doing it through the Black Sea Grain Initiative, because they were able to change the schedule of inspections, and ships could not sail unless they had been inspected by Russia, and Russia just would refuse to inspect ships. So they could very effectively, very they can't do that anymore. So now they have to use kind of fear as their only tool. It is absolutely more effective for them. However, they haven't generally had their patrol ships up near the Ukrainian coast. If you watch where most of the Ukrainian attacks on patrol ships have happened, and where the Baikov was operating when it stopped this particular civilian ship, they're all down much closer to Turkish waters in kind of the southern half of the Black Sea, and Ukraine doesn't have the ability to use the majority of their weapons on Russian ships down in that area, operating down in that area. The only weapon that they really have that's available to them consistently has that distance that it can travel is the USVs. And there's a lot of evidence to point out that while they have been able to attack those ships, the majority of the attacks in that particular area haven't caused enough damage to any of the ships they've attacked to actually make them useless for any consistent amount of time. So it's not that those attacks are not effective. They definitely change the way the Black Sea fleet operates within the Black Sea, but they aren't as effective as we would like to see. They don't cause they don't cause destruction to most of Russia's ships so far. hopefully that'll change. They're evolving them all the time, but they are not as effective as we would hope.
All right. Makes a lot of sense. Now I'd like to turn to two questions regarding the response by both, well, first Ukraine and then the West to the challenges that are presented by Russia in the Black Sea. But before doing this, I'd like to remind everyone that if you want to come up and ask a few questions, you can absolutely do that. You're more than welcome. Yep. Thank you. Sorry. So, Pavel, please raise your hands before asking a question. I'm going to ask my two, and then I'll open the floor if Exit is up for it. So the first question regards the Ukrainian response. So of course there's no ships traveling from Ukraine. The question of insurance is a bit muted, but at least in theory, there was the scheme proposed by the Ukrainian government to propose insurance specifically against direct attacks, and This has been mentioned and talked about quite a few times. Quite a few times we thought that it was going to be voted. Have you heard about it? Has it been voted yet?
So it is, like, it's technically passed, but it had gone back to committee for more information, and to kind of, they needed to change some of the language in it and address some of the concerns brought up by some of the finance committees and others. And that was on May 29th. And I have not seen an update to that piece of legislation since that date. It's possible that Russia pulling out of the Black Sea Grain Initiative and stopping this commercial ship for inspection and just kind of the escalation of actions by both sides in the Black Sea have changed the risk profile so much that they've needed to reassess the amount of funding that's available for that particular war risk insurance option. We don't really know because nobody's really talking about it, honestly. Nobody from Ukraine seems to be talking about it. I haven't really seen any updates from anybody. Nobody even in Ukraine that I've talked to and talked to on a regular basis seems to have an understanding of exactly where that's at. So we just don't know.
Okay. That's I guess unfortunate, even though maybe for the moment not very consequential. The second question I had was regarding the West, the friends of Ukraine. Has there been any important initiatives? I'm not talking about the rumors. I'm talking about actual actions that have been put forward in order to help Ukraine increase its ability to export?
So specifically, it's Romania that's really stepped up to the plate here. The U.S. this week, actually, the U.S. and Kubrikov, who's the infrastructure minister in Ukraine. So the U.S. Ambassador and Kubrikov were in Romania speaking with Romanian officials and a few other partners. I think Bulgaria was there too. I forget off the top of my head who all was there. But Romania is working to essentially double the volumes of grain that they can, of Ukrainian grain that they can export through their Danube River ports. So one of the things that they're doing is that rivers aren't easy to sail large ships through. You generally, when you want to sail a large ship through a river port like that, especially if it's a ship that's never been there before, each of these ports, they have pilots, so ship pilots that are employed by the port that will go out to a ship that is waiting to enter the port, and they will sail that ship into the port because they know the water's much better than a normal ship captain who sails on an open ocean. And they are able to watch how the river changes. They watch water flows for maybe new sandbars that might pop up overnight, things like that. They just are able to pay way more attention to how you navigate those particular river structures. And so you only have so many pilots for each port. And part of what Romania has committed to do in the coming months is to drastically increase the number of pilots that they have that can bring ships in and out of their ports, which will help increase the amount of exports they can do. So that's a really good thing. The other thing, when they were meeting with the U.S. this week, they've signed some agreements with the U.S. and a couple other partners to increase funding for infrastructure changes that should help them build more storage. So in order to export out of Romania's Danube River ports, you still need to get Ukrainian grain there. So it comes in two ways, through rail. Well, it comes in three ways, actually. Through rail. So they've announced some rail projects to kind of increase traffic on the rail lines and therefore be able to export more by rail to the Danube River ports and then get them out from there. They've just yesterday announced that they're going to create a new border crossing for Ukraine and Romania, so they'll be able to take more trucks through. And then they've also, I think it was 2 or 3 months ago, Ukraine had talked about increasing some of the infrastructure around their Danube River ports, because the other way that you do that is that you ship grain to Ukraine's Danube River ports, then it goes on a barge, goes down some of the river pathways essentially, and goes to the Romanian ports, is offloaded and then put onto bigger ships. And so they've essentially increased all three of those ways. Romania has been the leader in working with Ukraine to do that, even though they are part of the EU group of countries that effectively has a no import ban on Ukrainian grain right now. As long as it's specifically transiting through the country, they are welcoming Ukrainian exports and happy to take all that grain through their infrastructure and their ports. And like, functionally, this is just really great for Romania's economy. It's going to increase their exports. It's going to put a whole bunch more money through the people who work at the ports, the companies that export out of there, all of those things. Like, it's great for Romania's economy, and this is a good thing for them to capitalize on. There's also been a couple other EU countries who have offered their ports to increase exports of Ukraine's grains. Croatia is high on that list. But again, you still have to get grain from Ukraine to Croatia, usually either by rail or by truck, mostly by rail. Every single vehicle that grain has to go on in order to get out of the country and get to its final destination increases the cost of that grain. So all of these things are really great. They are helping to solve the problem, but they increase the cost of grain from Ukraine, which means that the farmers are getting paid less in the end for that grain. Because you can still only sell it at a really specific price point in order to be competitive. And so the end amount that goes back to the farmer is much, much smaller. And if we could open up the Odessa area ports again, that would ideally be the most effective way to export grain.
Thanks a lot, Exit. Before I move on to the question from the audience, is there something I've missed or you think should be mentioned?
I don't think so off the top of my head. I will double check as we go through here, but I don't think so.
Okay, well, it's a great pleasure to dive into that well of knowledge that you're providing us. Apparently I'm not the only one sporting my bathing suit. A few other people have come up. Sorry, one second. Yes. Abdulhamid, if you want to open your mic and ask a question, we'd be happy to.
Good evening from Pakistan. Hopefully you are guys are fine. Thank you very much for giving the time here. My question is that, though, when the Black Sea did the stop, definitely in Russia and the Ukraine, the ending stop will be the rises. And European Union must stop will be the rises when the export will be the dumping and the stop that. So after this a couple of months or the 3 months, other we can say the end of the quarter, where will be the ending stock position of in both this region? Definitely, if it still exists, they will put down the market very dangerously. So, what do you say about in this regard, especially from the price for costing? My concern is that. Thank you.
Thank you, Abdulhamid. Exit, I have to say that the quality of the audio for me was not great, so I did not get the answer, the question. So if you understood it, I would love it if you could repeat the question.
Yeah, so, and please feel free to correct me if I got this wrong, but I think you were asking about, there's been a number of complaints from EU countries that Ukraine is dumping grain into these EU countries, and they want to have this stopped so that their farmers can sell their grain at a reasonable price. So specifically, that's why exports of grain from Ukraine have been shut down to 5 EU countries since June, I think. Don't quote me on that date. They are scheduled to open back up on September 15th. It is not expected that that will happen at this point. It sounds very much like most of those EU countries will extend that ban until the end of the year. However, we've also seen signaling from the EU saying specifically that they would like to end that ban on September 15th. I don't personally think that that's going to happen. I think that it will be extended to the end of the year. Part of the reason I think it'll be extended is because Poland has a election coming up, and they have faced a lot of pushback from farmers in Poland about this particular issue, and those farmers vote. And in order for the Polish government to stay elected in the next election, they are going to work very hard to make those farmers happy and to get those votes. So I don't expect that ban will end anytime soon. We've also seen the EU come back with subsidies for the farmers in those 5 countries, trying to deal with the loss of income that they are looking at in those countries. I think there's still a discussion to be had about whether or not that was specifically dumping versus it was just a bunch of countries working very hard to get grain out, but not effectively selling that grain on. And so it sat for too long and then became a dumping issue and perceived as a dumping issue. Whereas I think that was really just more functionally an issue with people trying to react to a war and not having a well thought out, complete plan. The plan to get the grain out was great, but then there wasn't a follow up plan to, okay, how do we sell this on to the next buyer? And it just became a storage issue and then a dumping issue and then all of these other things. It didn't help that it was met at the same time with grain prices starting to drop for a number of reasons. And so the framing around that maybe got changed from what initially happened in that particular instance.
Thank you very much. That is an important context to cover. There are another two guests on the panel. If you want to raise your hand, so I know you have a question. Oh, LMT, please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. So I would like to know if there's any more information about that promise that I'm Romanian. So I know there was a meeting with the Ukrainians, U.S. and so on. And I know some of our ministers said, yeah, we're going to increase double the capacity of grain exports from Ukraine through Romanian ports. However, I don't understand exactly how they're going to do that. It's very easy to say, yeah, we're going to do it. But looking a bit back, it took a lot of time just to repair the train lines in one of our cities, which are on the gouge of Ukraine. So I'm wondering if there's any concrete information about this. Personally, I'm very skeptical, knowing the history that our transport minister and the, let's say, speed with which things are moving, generally speaking. Thanks.
Yeah, so you raise a perfectly valid point. And one that I completely agree with. These talks are great. I have not seen any details to exactly what is being planned. And it really doesn't matter what's planned. The time to make those changes effective is not short. This will not change anything about Ukraine's ability to export grain in the short term, which is the most important timeline, because Ukrainian wheat started harvesting kind of the middle of July. They are almost done Ukrainian wheat harvest. There's lots of other harvests still to come for other grains, but you have a really short block of time between now and when grain needs to be either stored somewhere safe because the weather changes, or it needs to be exported out of the country. And they are not going to be able to increase storage capacity at the ports, or change all the rail lines, or increase capacity on the rail lines in a short enough amount of time to actually deal with that really short harvest time. So you're absolutely right. This will help in the long term. And I think that's can be a positive solution and change for Romania and Ukraine in general, because it gives them more options to get that grain out. But ideally, it would be better if they could open up the Odessa area ports, A, because you're not having to transit the grain as far, and B, because even if you build more capacity into Romania, they can use that capacity to export other things. It doesn't have to be grain from Ukraine. It will still benefit the Romanian ports generally, and that's a great thing, but it's going to take quite a while to build up that infrastructure, whatever it is they have planned, and you're not going to solve the short-term problem that we have right now.
I think it's the same thing with the naval transport. So yeah, you can get the whatever grains or whatever else to some point in Ukraine, then you have to get it either through Moldova or through something like that, or directly through to Romania, but to a port. Then have to move the grains or whatever on a ship. Then that ship is going to sail through the Danube Delta, then go through the Danube Black Sea Channel, which gets into the Black Sea somewhere close to Constanza. So it's pretty much the same issue. And I like the idea. Okay, I think this meeting, whatever, should have taken place probably a year and something ago. Because the problem was here last summer also. And there's an interesting thing that happens. At some point, I spoke with some people in this agribusiness here. And at some point, you couldn't find a truck to carry your grain from the field to wherever you have to store it or sell it. Because almost all or a big part were transporting Ukrainian grain. So basically here, I don't think any farmer has a problem with the Ukrainian grain being dumped on the market. Problem is, moving these grains to Romania affects a lot of things, not only the quantity available. Yeah, it's sold. I know it's sold here somewhere, somehow, all through it's supposed to just transit. And I think here, starting with our government, but continuing with the EU, a lot of people sat on their asses and thought nothing in advance, more than a month or 2 months or something like that. And you're seeing the results. And I think it's the same for both road transport, train transport by train, and the river transport. It's pretty much the same thing. And of course, doing this adds a lot, adds time, and adds cost to the for the one that exports the grain from Ukraine. So, the ideal thing would be for them to be able to export directly. Is the same thing as the ship leaving from Odessa or whatever other port in southern Ukraine, and having to go through the territorial waters of Romania and Bulgaria, which supposedly it won't be attacked. Although a few days back we had a mine exploding outside the resort on the Black Sea coast. But yeah, okay, let's see. Let's hope it doesn't happen. But if you look at the map, going directly to...
Maybe you can ask a question to exit, to push the conversation forward.
Yeah, sorry. So basically what I was trying to understand is if there are some concrete steps in this direction, because all three kinds of transport, I haven't saw something that actually happened. Just did nice declarations and so on. Thanks. And
thank you. So yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying there. I agree that we haven't seen any facts or details about what this agreement or plan actually will entail. I, like you, would love to actually have some more information on that. It did just happen yesterday, so it might be that they just haven't hammered out those details yet. You did bring up a really important point that I think people maybe don't see as often as some of us do. Mines are a big issue in the Black Sea right now. It is absolutely incredible that no large ships have hit mines in the Black Sea in the last 18 months. I can't honestly understand how that's true. It blows my mind every day when I think about it. These mines are floating through major shipping lanes. They are kind of everywhere right now. If you talk to David Helms on a regular basis, you'll know that the currents change in the Black Sea depending on the wind and a whole bunch of other issues that change that. And so they are literally floating all over the Black Sea. In the last year, we've had them all the way over to Georgia. This week, there was a mine that showed up at a resort and hit a pier in Romania. It caused relatively minor damage, but that's really not the point. It proves again that there are a lot of mines floating around in the Black Sea. Romania then had to put out their mine detection ships and patrol again for more mines. They've also got helicopters out doing that. Bulgaria also is doing more work on that. The longer this goes on and the more mines are laid by Russia, the more dangerous this becomes for every other country on the Black Sea that has like seafront on the Black Sea. And it's more expensive for them. They have to spend more time and more money and their resources to go out there and make sure that their shipping lanes are safe so that their economy can continue to operate. This is very quickly becoming not just a problem for Russia and Ukraine. This is now a problem for Russia, Ukraine, and every single country that backs onto the Black Sea. It's costing them money. It's costing them time and effort. And if we continue to let this escalate in the way that we're doing so, at some point there will be a commercial ship that hits a mine and hopefully it won't do a lot of damage. Hopefully it won't sink, but it's going to happen. You cannot continue with this increase of escalation by both countries, honestly, and not have it affect commercial shipping. It will absolutely happen. It's just a matter of when. And that gets us back to the argument of why aren't we doing more to de-escalate the situation and provide security for arguably both countries to continue their commercial shipping, because food security for the rest of the world really depends on a lot of the grain that comes out of the Black Sea ports. And if we aren't ensuring that, we are absolutely changing how food security develops across the rest of the world.
Thank you very much. All right. There was another question floating, but the person has disappeared. So I think I'd like to wrap it up now with two rapid questions. The first one is, what's your understanding of the situation? Is there an obvious solution, but no one has the guts to do it, or is there no obvious solution? And honestly, on the long term, we might solve things, but on the short term, it's impossible.
Nothing is impossible. I refuse to believe that. You won't convince me of that. I think there are solutions out there. Turkey is continuing to attempt to negotiate with Putin. Putin is reportedly going to travel to Turkey for a meeting with Erdogan sometime in September. I fully expect that we will have more negotiations on reopening the Black Sea Grain Initiative or some version of it around that time. I am not certain that they will be successful. I am not certain that it will look exactly the same as it was before. I would argue that it absolutely should not. Allowing Russia to hinder inspections and put timelines on how many ships can sail in and out of Ukraine is absolutely asinine, and we need to solve that problem. We cannot continue the way that it was. I think there are probably other solutions out there. I'm not sure that we are to the point where we need to consider them with an eye to acting on them directly. I think the things that you should be watching are for Russia to escalate further in what it's doing. So the next escalation step for Russia would likely be that they would not only stop a ship and inspect it, but they would then commandeer that ship, take it to one of their ports and hold it for a specific period of time, claiming that that ship was possibly carrying military cargo or that they needed to run further inspections on it. that would be the next step that you would expect to see from Russia. If they start to do that, I think that's when we'd have a more considered attempt by other countries to deal with the situation. Escalations from Ukraine, I mean, they really only have the US visas available to them right now. Watching when the next attacks happen and what they're attacking can be instructive as to what we should expect from them. I do not consider Ukraine's US visa attacks to be escalations, and I would invite you all to not consider them that way either. I think it's silly to view them that way, even though I know there's a lot of people that have framed it that way. Arguably, Ukraine would have done this long ago. They just didn't have the ability to do that. And so saying it's an escalation when they just didn't have the ability up until now is just poor framing, in my view. But that's an opinion, and others are welcome to their own.
Ever political. Thank you very much, Exit. I've got one last question, and this one is going to be a lot easier for you because it's about you. There are still three ships that were part of the Black Sea Grain Deal that are sailing towards the destination. I know that because I'm reading your daily dashboard. But once those three ships have reached their destination, A, what will happen to your dashboard? And B, what are your plans?
The dashboard would disappear until there are more ships to track, because there just won't be anything to track anymore. We have some internal bets going between myself and Smog about, and I think, I don't know if Carolyn actually got in there on an actual date that she picked. I maybe think she avoided us on that, but Smog and I have some internal bets on when the last ship will actually deliver, so we'll see when that happens. But yeah, the dashboard would disappear, and the very first thing I do will be to take a night off and not actually release a report, because it's been more than a year now, and having a night off would feel pretty great. So that'll be the very first thing I do. After that, I have a lot of projects and a lot of other things that I track that you guys don't hear as much about. But also, as much as you don't hear about those things, it's entirely because the Black Sea has not calmed down and things have not stopped developing in the Black Sea. And there has consistently been more and more things to track and more news. And I don't really expect that to stop. I actually think it might increase. So yes, I will take one night off. We'll see how many other nights I start to take off. But I expect that I'll still be tracking events in the Black Sea going forward.
Fantastic. So I guess a glass of Georgian wine would be in order to celebrate that night. So I wish you a very, very pleasant evening with that bottle and whomever else you want to share it with. That being said, that was the fourth installment of our interviews with Exit 266. Once again, a lot of information. I learned a lot regarding the different port systems in Ukraine and how Russia is escalating by moving from attacking one port system to attacking both port systems, and also regarding the question of escalation on the sea itself, where the point of view of Exit was very interesting. So if you've missed the beginning of this broadcast, we will be available as a podcast on all your favorite podcast apps, and we at Tochny will be giving another broadcast this Sunday, where we're going to be speaking about a number of things. At when is it going to be? It's going to be at 8 Paris time, that's 9 Kyiv time, 9 p.m. Kyiv time, and that makes it, what, 2 p.m. If you're in New York, and what, 5 p.m. if you're in, or 4 p.m. if you're in Los Angeles. So I hope to see you this weekend on Sunday, and I'm giving the mic one last time to exit for it to say goodbye or to add something.
I don't think I have anything to add today. Thanks for having me again. I always appreciate our chats. And by all means, if people out there have questions, feel free to DM. I try to get to them all whenever I'm able to.
Thank you. And Slava Ukraini.
Here I'm Slava.